Walking Point, From the Ashes of the Vietnam War, by Perry A. Ulander. Narrated by Alan I. Ross. Published by North Atlantic Books. I would like to dedicate this book to all the people who, having put their faith and trust in social, political, or religious institutions, discovered that their faith had been misplaced and their trust betrayed. Chapter 1. Into the Unknown. Fort Lewis, Washington, December 1969. The rain changed to snow as I walked, aimless and alone, around the post. On the wall of the barracks labeled Transient Personnel, the duty roster had been posted for the day. Under the heading KP, the Army's acronym for Kitchen Police, which included details like scrubbing pots and pans and peeling potatoes, there was my name, Ulander Perry. It might have been possible to hang around the barracks and read or play cards, but that would have been asking for extra duty, such as polishing doorknobs with Brasso or cleaning latrines. I opted for the snow. When your mind is numb, you don't really feel the cold. Memories of the previous couple years passed through my mind as I walked, trying to justify my plight. I recalled a fateful but seemingly logical decision. Get some on-the-job experience after 2 years of studying structural engineering. There were companies in Milwaukee that would hire people with less than a bachelor's degree, and I thought that after working for a while, it would be easy to see how all the math, physics, and chemistry were applied, making it easier for me to discipline myself for the next 2 years of coursework. In college, no one was being drafted. I was 19. My world revolved around assignments, exams, and parties. There was news of this small war somewhere on the fringe of my narrow, self-centered perception, but it seemed that it should have been nearly over any day. So it was, with what seemed to have been a well-thought-out game plan, that I dropped out of school and accepted a junior position at one of the local firms. Things seemed to be going quite well. The head of the engineering department gave me a project that one of the full-fledged engineers had left behind when he returned to school to get his master's degree. My brother and I were sharing an apartment, and even though I occasionally stumbled over the engine block of the sports car that he was overhauling in the living room, it was better than living in the dorm. Ignorance is bliss. I remember breaking into a cold sweat reading the letter that told me to appear for a pre-induction physical in Chicago. A few sleepless nights later, there I was, in my jockey shorts, following the yellow line painted on the floor, hoping the Army would find something wrong with me. But it seems that when one is up for a major life transition, there's nothing that will hold it back. Still, after reading yet another letter, this one starting out, "Greetings from the President," I couldn't help but wonder why, out of all the people in this country, they wanted me. As I continued to wander around the military base in the snow, as if on autopilot, my mind raced through the memories of the months that followed my greetings. There was an image of me on a bus with a group of equally anonymous recruits, pulling into Fort Polk at 2 in the morning. We were ordered to march in an orderly fashion to some bleachers to receive our orientation talk. Drill sergeants took 2-hour shifts, telling us, in a high-speed, mechanical monotone, what we were expected to do. Most of it didn't make much sense. It seemed to be designed to keep us awake all night rather than to inform, so we would be groggy and malleable for the indoctrination to come. At the first light of dawn, processing started with the traditional haircut. The Army barber held the back of my head with his left hand and brought the heavy-duty electric clippers in for a crash landing just above my forehead. 4 or 5 strokes across the top and a few scrapes up the back, and I was nearly bald. A heavy thump on the shoulder meant I was done, ready to be herded to another building for shots. Anyone who hesitated wound up on the floor doing push-ups while a sergeant informed him that he was in the Army and that his present status was trainee. In case you didn't know what a trainee was, he'd let you know that it was lower than whale shit, and that was on the bottom of the ocean. It was clear that Phase 1, mortification, of the military's psychological remodeling job, was already in full swing. The programmed dissolution of one's identity had begun. Any indication of valuing or identifying with our previous identities was met with swift punishment and humiliation. It was clear that we were no longer jocks or eggheads, streetwise city kids, or old boys from the country. To the army, we were nothing, worthless, useless. For 2 months, we were confined to the post to ensure that contact with the civilian world wouldn't remind us of our former selves. Phase 2, reconstruction, began to blend subtly with Phase 1 after a couple weeks. As one's new identity was introduced, those who conformed most readily were referred to as troop or trooper. Guys with the shiniest brass and boots were no longer at the bottom of the ocean, but were, by virtue of a new name, suspended a few feet off the ocean floor. The osmosis of the new value system in some of the guys was so complete that they began to compete for a string of carrots that was dangled before the new eager horses. With a little effort, one could become a trainee squad leader, platoon leader, or company commander. These were honorary positions. One's actual rank and pay grade remained the same, but guys fought for a new name, pushing for a front row seat on a hell-bound bus. Insanity within insanity. The power of naming was evident on the rifle range as well. At first, the targets were targets, a black bull's eye within concentric rings. Later, they were silhouettes of the head and trunk of a man, and finally, they were animated silhouettes that would pop up from behind rocks and bushes. The form had changed, but the name remained the same, targets, so that, with a large but not illogical leap, future targets would be flesh and blood. Even hypnosis found its way into the reconstruction process. After being roused at dawn and gathered in formation, we'd be double-timed around the post, chanting, "I want to be an airborne ranger. I want to live a life of danger. I want to go to Vietnam. I want to kill old Charlie Kong." The early morning grogginess and the force of 100 men chanting together made it easier to pump the message into the subconscious, where it would eventually become, apparently, one's own thought, one's own desire. Over the weeks, there had also been a progression in rank of the people addressing us. At first, it was just a drill sergeant, then occasionally the company commander would deign to say a few words to the men. Finally, on graduation day, amid the bands playing and the bleachers full of proud parents and relatives, they managed to pry this overweight, alcoholic bozo of a general away from the officers' club long enough to tell us what great fighting men we'd become. Even the gloomy sky and cold drizzle couldn't keep me from laughing to myself at the absurdity of the pageantry of our graduation from basic training. It seemed barely possible that the actors in the play would be able to keep straight faces through it all, and yet, though also tragically funny, they were serious. I remembered a queasy feeling setting in after basic training. It made me think of the kid who thinks he's on top of the bargaining with the slick used car salesman and drives off in a new cream puff with the bad transmission. I wanted out. But at this point, the options weren't very appealing. Out-and-out rebellion could get you a few years of being sodomized in jail. Or if you could conjure up a convincing case of lunacy, you could get an undesirable discharge that would follow you around for the rest of your life, as we were regularly reminded. But perhaps there was something to the rumor that the only openings for airborne personnel were in Germany. Grabbing at straws, I signed up, and after 3 weeks of jump school, I was officially authorized to be the only thing besides bird shit that comes out of the sky. After jump school, I was assigned a military occupational specialty for the next phase of training. It came up 11B, infantry, light weapons, and I was sent back to Fort Polk for 8 more weeks of double time and rifle range. A few new variations on the theme were introduced, such as cordon and search, infiltration of enemy territory, and war games with blanks. The weeks flew by, and at the end a sergeant read the list of our names and new duty stations. The list only occasionally featured the names of stateside bases or Germany, but still when he read Ulander, Perry, RVN, I was stunned. I remembered listening to his voice when he announced RVN. Republic of Vietnam, after other names. It sounded sad, sickened, apologetic. And recognizing the combat infantry badge sewn above his shirt pocket, I saw the reason.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?